Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What is going on? It is Wednesday, and it seems as though things have quieted down, at least in terms of protesting so far today. We are on the verge of news about the NBA season returning. July the 31st would be the return date, with 22 teams returning for a completion in the playoffs for the 2020 season. John, what's up, man?
All right, so there are a lot to unpack here with this. Now, let's also tell you that this still needs to be ratified by the Board of Governors, which is expected to happen Thursday, which is expecting to happen tomorrow. So on tomorrow's show, it may be absolutely, totally official. It's not yet. As a matter of fact, Sham Sharania kind of explained that earlier today on Stadium. Here's Shams explaining what he expects will be approved and why it possibly doesn't sound like it'll be turned down, but what still needs to happen. Here's Shams.
Sources tell me the NBA will propose a 22-team format for return of the 2019-20 season in a Board of Governors call on Thursday. I'm told there's a lot of work still to be done from a planning perspective for any restart. There's still protocols, health and safety measures that need to be addressed and worked on. But in essence, the NBA's plan would be 22 teams returning on July 31st in Orlando, regular season games, and then a play-in tournament for the 8th and 9th seeds in the East and West Conference. Regardless, the NBA is on the verge of its comeback. As far as the play-in tournament, I'm told this is how it will work. If the 9th seed is 4 or more games behind the 8th seed, the 8th seed will be rewarded that seed. If the 9th seed is 4 games or fewer behind the 8th seed, they both will enter a play-in tournament, single elimination for the 9th seed, and double elimination for the 8th seed. This is just another way for Adam Silver and the NBA to spice up a return of the season that seems to be closer and closer heading to Thursday's Board of Governors meeting.
Okay, so let's break that out a little bit. First of all, we've seems as though we're going to maintain the integrity of the conferences, right?
Right. Although the 22 teams they're bringing back are all, there's going to be, you know, the 16 that you make it, and then 4 from the West and
13
one
from the West
the
and 9 from the East. Yeah.
Right. So, The 16 that are in the playoffs now, and then only the Wizards from the East, because they're within striking distance. And then in the West, they're bringing back all those teams that have a real sick shot. Now, keep in mind, Mace, the Grizzlies are still 3.5 up.
Right.
So they've got a 3.5.
And what was Shams' number? Was it 5 games or 4 games?
4. So if the Grizzlies just hold water, there's a decent chance they won't have to even play a play-in tournament. And if they do, if they have the 8th spot, they can they get a double elimination situation where the other team only gets a single elimination. So it's
so do I have this right? Any team that stays within 4 games of Memphis then has a chance to play into the tournament.
Correct. And that the team that has the 8th spot, we would assume that would be Memphis, can lose twice in this tournament, but the other teams can only lose once. So and I think that's fair. It's heavily tilted towards the teams that have the 8th seed now. Now, let me circle back to something Sham said right at the top there. He said there's still a lot of things that need to be worked out in terms of health and safety and regulations. So that could delay this, but all expectations are, Woj is reporting, Shams is reporting, that this could be approved by the Board of Governors tomorrow. And on tomorrow's Mason and Ireland show, it could be all systems go.
Yeah.
We could know by then. That will be 2:55 Pacific. That'll be almost 6 o'clock in the East. We should know by then what we're doing. And this, if you're a Laker fan, and most of the people that listen to us are,
yep,
if this reporting is accurate, this is good news for the Lakers. It would be 8 games to warm up, which is what kind of LeBron and other guys were hinting towards, that they needed a ramp up for the season. And so that would give it to them. That would give them the 8 games. And then, Mace, another thing that's being reported is that the NBA is likely to just pick up where the schedule left off. So for
and play those final eight games as they were to come on the schedule.
Not the the final eight of this season, but the next eight on the schedule. So for the Lakers, if that report is accurate, and again, I'm not speaking as a Lakers employee today. I'm commenting on the reporting of Shams and Woj and all these guys. The Lakers will have something to say tomorrow. That's why you're probably not going to hear a lot of Laker people talking today. Nothing's been approved and there's been no vote yet. But if this reporting is accurate, they would play Houston, Denver, Utah again. Then the next game, Mace, was Charlotte. They wouldn't be there. Charlotte wouldn't be inside.
Oh, right,
on campus.
Right.
So you just skip them and go to the next game. So it would be and then the next game would have been against Detroit. Same thing. I don't think Detroit's in. And so
nope.
It would be Toronto, Cleveland.
Nope. No
Washington.
Cleveland.
Right. So you just keep going. Now, what's Indiana would be the last game. So it would be Toronto, Washington, Minnesota would be out. So then they'd play Indiana. So those would be the eight. Now, what's notable about that is, remember they rescheduled the Clipper game.
Right.
But that's not in that window.
No,
so
it's
not. So the Lakers and Clippers, theoretically, if that reporting is accurate, couldn't meet again unless they met in the playoffs, which is what I'm hoping for and you're hoping against.
Yes.
You don't want to see the Clippers.
I want to see the Clippers out. I want the Clippers out. I want to see them crash and burn like they do every year.
And
so my opinion has remained resolute on that.
Yeah, we just disagree. But now that we don't get the hallway series, like we don't get the games at Staples Center, I am less married to the idea that the Lakers meet the Clippers. That when it was going to be here and it was going to be a huge deal in LA and I thought the Laker fans would take over the building. Of course, now there are no fans.
Yep.
So we'll see how that all plays out. But the other thing is, if you're a Laker fan, the eight games is a good number for the Lakers because they're 5.5 up in the West. And so it'd be highly unlikely that they'd be anything other than the one seed. You know, they would have to go on some extraordinarily
freaky streak. Yeah, they win four games and they've locked it up.
Right. And even if they went 3-5, some other team would have to go 8-0 or, you know, it
exactly.
would be really weird for them. So it would be, if this is the way it plays out, the Lakers are sitting in a very good position. Now, of course, if they were the one seed in the West, they would have to wait and see who they would play in that either play-in tournament or if Memphis can lock it up.
Right.
So there's a lot to play out here, but it's very exciting. It now appears that we're heading this way. And I've heard criticism today from people saying, no, I wanted just the 16.
I wanted just the 16. I was in favor of just the 16. That would have uniquely, although it still would have had to play out because the seedings are very, very close. But at least as of this moment, it would have put Milwaukee and the Clippers on one side of the bracket and the Lakers on the other side with Toronto as the other top seed from the East. That would have been a huge advantage for the Lakers because then you don't see Milwaukee or the Clippers until the NBA Finals. So I love the 1 through 16. And if there was ever a time to throw out the rule book, the manual, the handbook, it would be right now in this really, really weird year.
Right, and then the other side of that argument was that you put all 30 teams in so the young teams could play. I understand that. Why put a bunch of teams in there that don't have anything to play for? That doesn't make any sense. You're just making the campus or the bubble bigger. So I think this was a good compromise if it gets approved, and that's the next step, that tomorrow it could get approved.
So here's what I think is really interesting. There are some top seeds, the teams that are near the top of their conferences, and teams that have very good positions going into the playoffs. There are some teams that are looking for a little extra advantage to be awarded because they played so well during the regular season. So tell me what you think of these ideas. The higher seeded team
Is this the McMenamin story?
Yeah, this is the McMenamin story. The higher-seeded team, like in this case the Lakers, are awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarter. So, in other words, jump ball to start the game, and then the Lakers would get the ball to start the second, third, and fourth quarters. What do you think?
Okay, so let me preface all this by saying I'm obviously a Laker fan.
Yes.
And you know, I work for the Lakers, so all these things would be good. But if you're asking me to put on my commissioner's hat, to put on my Adam. So I'm in favor of anything that gives the Lakers an advantage as John Ireland. But as the commissioner, Adam Silver.
Or as a basketball fan.
Yeah, I think giving extra possessions to a team is a little much.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I would have a tough
time
making that argument.
This is bridge too far. All right. Higher seeded team being allowed to designate one player who could be whistled for seven fouls instead of six fouls.
No, I think we need two players so we can cover LeBron and AD.
Correct.
Yeah, that one's never passing.
That's never like going to pass.
That's like basically saying, give in football, give one team five downs. Yeah, that's too fundamental of a change.
Watch
Mace. We're going to find out that the Lakers are the team that submitted all these proposals, and I'm going to get killed for saying anything negative. But again, as a Laker fan, I'd love to see them all happen. That's a big change, though, that one.
There needs to be some integrity in the games. The game should still be played exactly the same way competitively as it would be.
But there
despite.
Are. I know where you're going, and there's some of these that I'm going to legitimately try and push through, so keep going.
Okay. This one I agree with. Higher-seeded team receives an extra coach's challenge. I have absolutely no issue with that whatsoever.
Still, again, a competitive disadvantage.
Such a minor one.
So what I keep thinking is I think the Lakers are going to the finals, so I'm playing devil's advocate here. Would I want the Bucks to have an extra coaching challenge against the Lakers in the finals? The answer is no.
The percentage chance, John, or what is the percentage of coaches' challenges being successful this year?
Oh, it's not high. And the other thing is they're not always used.
Right.
They don't even use them all the time.
So it's not nominal at best.
It's not a big deal. But that's another one that you're kind of tinkering with the actual competitive balance.
Now, this one I really like. Higher-seeded teams being able to transport their actual hardwood home court from their arenas for Orlando to preserve the feel of their home playing experience. I don't think that can actually be underestimated. I think that's for real.
This one is 100%. They should do, because it doesn't involve more people. You're not saying you can bring your cheerleaders, which would put other people at a coronavirus risk.
Right.
They're not saying. I actually think, and maybe this is coming up on your list, but I actually think not only could you give them the home floor, but how about we have Lawrence Cantor record the intros?
Sure.
So he becomes the voice of the game. You know, he doesn't have to actually be there. He could be like, you know, you just have him record any possible eventuality, and then you have that.
Well,
that
reminds me
SNL.
Of that SNL sketch.
Gerald Ford was eaten by wolves today.
I mean, here's the thing about that, though. So let's say it's Lakers Memphis in the first round. Does that mean Memphis brings their floor to Orlando also and switches it out for what would have been their home games?
No. I think what it means is because you were the higher seed, you don't get any home court advantage, so you get the floor. The higher seed gets the floor for all seven games. Now, here's the problem. Do you know how many floors are available at Disney? I don't know for sure.
I do not know the answer.
If that's where they end up going, because all indications are. It takes some time to change a floor.
Yeah.
We may want to just have, like the NCAA tournament, just have a generic NBA floor to keep the day moving. I don't know. Once the playoffs start, I think we can get it down to 3-4 games a day. But before the playoffs starts, when everybody's playing 8 games, remember, you don't want this thing dragging any farther into the fall than it has to.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be a little bit like the NCAA tournament. I mean, there are going to be games going on simultaneously all over the place.
Right. If that's true, Do you want to shut down for 45 minutes to change the floor after every game?
Yeah, maybe you just do it for the playoffs themselves.
Right, right. I think that makes more sense.
And the last feature, and this is again in Dave McMenamin's article on ESPN, an off-court feature in which playoff teams, in order of seeding 1 through 16, receive first choice on picking which hotel they will stay at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex. Now, I've got no idea how many hotels. Like, are there low-end hotels? Is somebody going to wind up at the Disney Motel 6? Or how does that work?
This, by the way, is a no-brainer. They should do this yesterday. Milwaukee's got the best record. They get first pick. Lakers have the second best record. They get the second pick. All right. So I just got a text from McMenamin.
Yep.
He will come on next and talk about whether or not any of these things are realistic.
Okay,
he wants
good.
To come on and give his 2 cents. So we'll get McMenamin in here next. This was his article on ESPN.com that we're speculating about.
Okay, we will get into that with McMenamin next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, so what's going on? It is Wednesday afternoon. We are awaiting a Board of Governors meeting for the NBA tomorrow, in which will be determined exactly the plan forward for the way the season is going to be resumed and the playoffs are going to take place.
And we were just going over an article by our friend Dave McMenamin, who suggested that the top seeds would like to see or would like to get something for their effort. You know, something for the fact that in a normal year,
some little bit of tiny home cooking.
In a normal year, they would have a tremendous home court advantage. And Mace, in the NBA, home court means something, particularly in game sevens. It becomes a very valuable thing. Now, this year, no one will have home court, because they're sending everyone to Orlando, unless the Orlando Magic got ridiculously hot, but it really wouldn't matter. It wouldn't be home court for them because there's no fans. And so we were trying to decide which one of those things was plausible.
Yeah, or maybe go off the board, too. We're going to talk to McMenamin in a minute, but can you think of anything else that they might try?
And here, without further ado, is our friend Dave McMenamin. Dave, long time no talk. How you holding up, man?
I'm doing okay, all things considered. Great to hear from you guys.
Good. Great talking to you. All right, so was your article, were those ideas that you found in your reporting, were some of them just creative writing on your part, or where did those ideas
yeah,
come
was
from?
This creative writing class, Dave?
Very interesting.
No. I mean, I think I would have had, I don't know. So one, I don't think I would have come up with some of these had I just let my imagination run wild.
I know you pretty well. There's no way you're going seven fouls. There's no way that's coming out of your mouth.
You know, I'm a traditionalist. Like, so that one's a little bizarre. The tough part here is I actually think there is some merit to the conversation. I know, like,
I do too.
A lot of people, I mean, there's always a lot of things that go into anything. And, you know, for many reasons, I think people found this to be a little outside the box, a little superfluous with everything going on. And that's fine. But fundamentally, if you look at what's happened in the league the last month, 99% of the conversation that has been having in these closed door Board of Governors meetings is about what the bottom of the bubble is going to look like. How many teams are we going to involve? Are we going to have all 30? Are we going to have a playoff, a play in before the playoffs? Is it 22 teams? Is it 20 teams? Is it the pool play with 24 teams? And there was so much time and effort that went into that, that there wasn't as much time and effort or focus on the fact that home court advantage, that teams worked more than six, put in more than 75% of the season in to get, just suddenly disappeared. And so would there be some way to account for that? And I think the rock of the hard place is that there's already so many changes occurring with this playoff format because of what the world's going through with COVID-19. And there was already concern that this would be looked at as an asterisk title, or play would be compromised. And would the league want to do anything to make it seem even more foreign? And thus, even though they would, you know, maybe rightfully so, be taking care of one of these top teams, they could end up shooting themselves in the foot in the process.
So let's take these on sort of one-on-one, the way you've laid them out in your piece, and talk about how realistic, how big an advantage they would be. First one is higher-seeded team being awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarters following the traditional jump ball to begin the game. To me, at least, this is an absolute non-starter. You don't mess with the actual integrity of the game itself. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a fair assessment of this one. It just seems a little bit like an uneven playing field. And I think, you know, as soon as you can say that, you say, well, okay, I can't think of any other instance where one team has one set of rules and the other team has another set of rules and you're trying to play the same game. So maybe other than... Well, I won't even go there. Right. So, yeah.
So, Dave, we can also apply that to ideas two and three in your piece. The one player allowed seven fouls, the higher team receiving an extra coach's challenge. All three of those basically change the level playing field concept you're talking about, right? So are those three all probably
now,
highly unlikely?
I think they're highly unlikely. Now, the one thing, and I didn't include it in the story, because I thought I was going to get a little bit too much into the weeds, but...
Oh, we are going to be left hanging with that.
Boy, right when he's getting to the good part.
Right when he said he didn't want to put it in the story because we might get too stuck.
We're about to get inside info.
And now we don't get that.
Funch, work on getting him back, will you? But, you know, to your point, Mace, the integrity of the game issue applies to all three of those.
Yes.
Possession thing, the seven fouls thing, which I thought was the most outrageous, and then the extra coaches challenge thing. But the hotel thing makes perfect sense to me, and the hardwood floor thing makes sense to me if we're not all sitting around waiting for floors
to be changed, etc. It certainly wouldn't work during those final eight games of the season.
If you're going to play
too much changing of floors,
if you're going to play several games a day on one court, which you know we still don't know yet whether or not that's the whole part of it, but it.
But I think there is an advantage with feeling like you are on your home court, whether there are fans there or not. Seeing that Lakers logo on the floor, I think, means something to an organization.
Okay, good. So we got Dave back. Dave,
okay.
Literally, your phone
called
right when you said, I didn't put it in the piece because it was too into the weeds, and then you dropped. So what did you not
okay.
put in?
So you could designate a home team every game of the series, quote-unquote home team. So the higher seed, you're getting be the home team games 1, 2, 5, and 7. And the other team could be the home team games 3, 4, and 6. And both teams could have access to these benefits we're talking about.
Right.
Just the quote-unquote home team,
that
you get the benefit one extra time.
That would be more palatable. Yeah, that would absolutely be. Now, let me ask you a question about the one of these things you had on here was the Lakers, for example, could bring in their home floor and make it feel like more thing. Do you know, Dave, how many games are going to be played on? For example, I don't even know how many courts are available at Disney World. Do you?
I'm not totally sure on this, but I believe, if my memory serves, there's three full-size NBA courts within the Wide World Sports Complex.
Okay, so let's run with that. If you allowed every home team to use their floor, wouldn't we have to sit around and wait for them to change the floor? I love the idea of letting the Lakers or the Bucks use their home floor, but not if it meant 45 minutes of standing around waiting for the maintenance guys to physically do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. So maybe this is something for the eight regular season games that wouldn't be applied. But once you get to the playoffs,
right, You could do it.
I think you can do it. We see Staples Center change over for a Clippers Lakers game in the same day, right? In
45 minutes.
I think it can be done.
You can flip the arena any way you want. And I actually think there's benefit that goes along with this, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I like it for the visuals on TV, right? Like, I think you get some continuity of what you're used to seeing, the setting where you see these players play, where you have the court and you have that type of, you know, grain wood that you associate with it, or the logos or whatever. I don't think it's a terrible idea. And also, I don't think it's some grandiose ask. I mean, there's still 18-wheelers driving around this country and moving goods back and forth. You can load that baby up and send it down to Florida.
I totally agree. Now, your last one, the one about if you got the best record, you get to pick hotels first, makes
hotel draft.
Yeah, the hotel draft makes complete total sense to me. What would the objection be to the hotel draft?
I think it's great. Like, I mean, you guys are a little bit older than me, but I'm sure hopefully you still get away on buddy weekends or whatever. And when you rent out an Airbnb, people, you burst through the door and it's kind of like first dibs, right? Who gets to go find the best bedroom?
Go for the waterbed. Amen.
Up? Right. It reminds me of that. I don't know. And I think there's a little bit of like a petty nature to it, you know, some gamesmanship.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. I mean, some people have said, oh, let's put this on television and stuff. I don't really think that would be that much of a compelling thing to watch.
Oh, are they going to go Hilton or Hyatt? Hilton or Hyatt? Which way do you think?
Now,
but,
Dave,
you know, I'm sure these front offices, they have meticulous layouts of what the grounds are going to look like within the bubble. And so they know which hotel is closest to the best restaurant that's available in the bubble, or closest to the golf course, or closest to the gym. And I think it's a very competitive field we're talking about. The NBA is full of the most competitive athletes, or some of the most competitive athletes in the world. And so if you can get even a slight edge or a perceived slight edge, let's go for it.
Dave, do you know yet whether they're going to allow the Dave McMenamins of the world, the beat writers and the guys who cover teams like you do on a regular basis, onto the campus? Has that been discussed yet?
It's been discussed. And I would say if I had to guess yes or no, it looks more like yes than no, which is a good thing. But we don't know exactly what it's going to look like. Don't know what level of access that is going to be, whether it'll, even though if you were on site, there could still be some Zoom type press conference element to it. So many more things to be ironed out, but I'm fairly certain there will be media presence, just not sure exactly what it's going to look like.
All right. Gotcha. Hey, Dave, thank you very much. By the way, what do you think? What do you think of the plan just overall? 22 teams work for you?
I you know what, Steve? Part of me is like, if you're going to do 22, just do 30 and have those other 8 teams be a part of the 8 games. But you know what? I understand this is such a wild time, and they've been throwing everything against the wall to see what it sticks. I think the league is going to come out looking okay, knock on wood, with everybody's health, but I think it's a pretty solid plan.
And last thing for you, Dave, I've known you for a long time. You're one of the men who looks excellent with a beard. How much facial growth have you allowed during the pandemic?
So I went like close to 2 months without, and I'm like, I keep a beard, but I also like, I text with my barber, like Carlos is my dude. And so I'm going in sometimes, you know, once every week when I have a lot of TV going on to get my beard and hair shaped up. So I did the whole clippers with myself about 2 months in, and now I'm another 6 weeks in. My beard's starting to get a little straggly. My hair,
excellent.
I haven't touched in 3 months. It's not the great situation going on here.
I'll be anxious to see you when you get back into our living rooms every night. Hey, thank you for doing this, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
Right. Cool. There's Dave McMenamin. And yeah, it sounds like apart from the hotel draft, which I still think
I love,
is funny.
Like he says, it's petty.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, oh, really? There, I'm at the Motel 6, and they're at the Grand Bohemian? Come on.
And the actual home hardwood, which I think you and I agree on, there's something to be said for that once you get to the playoffs, that the rest of those affect the integrity of the actual games themselves and are going to be non-starters.
Probably. All right, so as the protests continue to go on,
yep,
and the really the discussion continues to move, there have been sports figures that continue to speak out and then continue to drive controversy. Two of them today, Vic Fangio, the coach of the Broncos, and Drew Brees, surprisingly.
Yeah, Drew
Brees. The quarterback of the Saints are both being talked about. We'll tell you why coming up next.
Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Enormous protests all across the country and here in Los Angeles over the murder of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis. There is an enormous gathering in downtown Los Angeles, looking at a gathering in front of the mayor's house in Hancock Park, and there is no sign of the protesting slowing down, either here locally or across the country.
That's why it's a little surprising that Drew Brees, who is generally known as one of the NFL's good guys, he has done a ton of work in New Orleans, did a ton of hurricane relief, has worked at the food banks. It generally has a really solid reputation around the league. Did an interview, and you know, one thing that's come out of this, Mace, come out of these protests, is that Colin Kaepernick tried to protest peacefully by taking a knee during the anthem.
Yep.
And he was basically blackballed for it. It didn't work, at least not for Kaepernick. So Drew Brees was doing an interview last night. This runs a couple of minutes. And here's what Brees had to say about looking back on what Kaepernick did when he protested by taking a knee during the anthem a couple of years ago.
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better. And that we are all part of the solution.
You know, Drew Brees is not being part of the solution with counterproductive comments like that. Devin McCourty, Jason McCourty, the brothers of the New England Patriots commented this way. They called it a disgrace to speak about your grandfathers as if they weren't as if there weren't black men fighting next to them. Those men later returned to a country that hated them. Don't avoid the issue and try to make it about a flag or the military. Fight like your grandfathers for what's right.
Well, here's the strange thing, Mace. He said it shows unity. And what he's done by taking this particular stance is I don't think anybody disagrees with Brees' point that the flag is a symbol of honor. But it's not Kaepernick's point. And Malcolm Jenkins, who plays for the Saints. So think about this. He used to play in Philadelphia, but now he's in New Orleans. By taking this stand publicly, Drew may have blown up the unity on his own team. Listen to Malcolm Jenkins after Jenkins heard what we just played for you.
Our communities are under siege, and we need help. And what you're telling us is don't ask for help that way. Ask for a different way. I can't listen to it when you ask that way. We're done asking, Drew. And people who share your sentiments, who express those and push them throughout the world, the airwaves, are the problem. And it's unfortunate because I considered you a friend. I looked up to you. You're somebody who I had a great deal of respect for. But sometimes you should shut the fuck up.
That's all past tense. You were a friend. You were somebody I looked up to. LeBron James subtweeted Preece here. Is it still surprising at this point? Sure isn't. You literally still don't understand why Cap was kneeling on one knee. Has absolutely nothing to do with the disrespect of the flag and or soldiers, men and women who keep our land free. My father-in-law was one of those. I just, you know, this is part of that sort of, we talk about systemic racism. We talk about how it is so embedded, ingrained in our culture. The entire idea that somehow Colin Kaepernick was disrespecting the nation, disrespecting the flag by taking a knee Drew had to have gotten the memo by now. He has to look out his window and see thousands of protesters. There are people who are just tired, who are sick and tired. And people now, thinking people, can now make a distinction between kneeling during the national anthem and disrespecting the country and the men and women that fight in uniform. You've got to be able to make that distinction if you're Drew Brees. You're better than this.
There is an attitude that has taken shape over the past at least 4 days, maybe a little bit longer, really ever since the murder in Minnesota, where things you could say a year ago, Mace, people are no longer going to tolerate. That's what you just heard out of Malcolm Jenkins. They're just not having it. And for a smart guy, Drew didn't do a very good job of reading the room. And one thing that I think is, it's protest 101. Basically, if you study, I was a history major at UCLA, if you study the history of protest, the goal of a protest is to disrupt. That's what you're trying to do.
Yep.
You're trying to elicit change. The reason Colin Kaepernick took a knee during the anthem is that's what would cause the most disruption. He was doing it at a time where he knew the most dialogue and the most eyeballs would be on him. And it cost him his career. But I think if we look back on it now, especially this week, Kaepernick's going to end up on the right side of history.
Absolutely.
And for Drew to say that he was disrespecting the flag, I've never thought that Colin Kaepernick is necessarily unpatriotic.
No.
I don't connect those dots. What I do think is he's a very vigilant protester. He's really good at protesting. You know, he knew that this would rattle cages, and it ended up costing him his career. But I don't go from there to saying he hates America. I almost think the opposite. I think he's trying. He gave up his career to try and change something that now we all agree desperately needs to be changed.
Well, and so much of this, John, is if you look at what LeBron, for example, tweeted out, that side-by-side image of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem at an NFL game, and Derek Chauvin, the police officer who's been arrested for third-degree murder, who took a knee on George Floyd's neck. You look at those side-by-side images, and you see that Colin Kaepernick was very much ahead of his time. He saw what he saw in his neighborhoods has continued to this day. And that's why you see so many people in the streets right now. That's why you see, I'm looking at the TV screens across the country. And for Drew Brees to not have learned from his prior position, for him not to have looked at the world and said, you know what? Probably I was wrong when I said that before.
Well,
now I get the picture. Now I understand it more.
he's having an anthem debate, okay? He's making this conversation about the flag and the anthem. That's not what the protest is about. The protest is about racial inequality and police brutality. Drew's over there having a completely separate conversation, and that, by the way, is what the politicians hijacked, you know, back when Kaepernick was doing this.
Yes.
They made this a debate about the anthem and the flag when Collins' debate consistently from the beginning was about two things, racial inequality and police brutality. That was the point Kaepernick was trying to make. And so I think Drew is going to find, like Vic Fangio is going to find out today, that when you don't get that, when you don't understand what the protest is about, people are done letting you slide. People are done saying, oh, he doesn't get it, poor him. No, now you're getting called out. Now your own teammate is going on in a press conference in tears saying, shut the F up. To the leader of the Saints.
Yeah.
Sean Payton now has a mess on his hands, the head coach of the Saints. And Mace, they have a really good team. They're one of the top five teams favored to go to the Super Bowl this year.
Yep.
This could throw the whole thing into a spiral that they won't be able to get out of. Your best player and leader of the team just made everyone mad, especially all the black guys. And now what we're seeing with these protests are, it's not just a black issue. Other people have lined up, white, Asian, Hispanic. Everybody has said, we've had it. We're not putting up with this anymore. Look at George Floyd. Enough is enough.
Yeah.
And Drew just didn't read any of that.
It is intolerable. And somehow, through his statement, Drew Brees is indicating that he still doesn't understand. He still doesn't quite get it. Even after everything we've seen, he still doesn't quite understand what this is really about. You know what? We'll take some phone calls on this. 877-710-ESPN. Drew Brees is turning the current protests into a conversation about kneeling during the national anthem, which is very, very 4 or 5 years ago. We've moved well past that part of the conversation, but Drew has not. 877-710-ESPN, Mason in Ireland, 710-ESPN. 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland, looking at protests across the city of Los Angeles again today. This is now well over a week that we have seen protests. There's an enormous protest in downtown L.A. There is one in Hancock Park. Thousands of people taking to the streets, demanding social justice and demanding that police brutality stop in our country. Drew Brees today talked about the national anthem protests of Colin Kaepernick a few years back, saying he still does not believe that Kaepernick was right because he was disrespecting the flag and disrespecting his grandfathers who fought in the military. Malcolm Jenkins has now spoken out against Brees. LeBron James has spoken out against Brees. It really is a huge mistake on his part. And it's also just a factor of being, he's just misinformed. He's just misinformed. He's a smart guy. I can't imagine that that's where the conversation went for him in this interview.
Well, you just hit on it. The conversation has moved. Yesterday, Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Denver Broncos, said there's no racism in the NFL. This despite the fact that there are no black NFL owners. There are no black team presidents. I think there are 3 out of 32 coaches of color in the NFL right now, and 2 black head coaches were fired within the last 3 years with less than 3 years on the job.
Right.
I mean, there's a huge racism problem in the NFL, and the conversation has moved. The conversation Drew is having was the one people were having 4 years ago. Again, I would encourage if I was Drew's agent or one of his friends and I was talking to him today, I would say, look, you've misread this. you can be patriotic and honor your grandparents. I've always said, Mace, that I personally always stand at attention at the anthem.
Yes.
Because I am a Lakers employee. I am there at their behest. I don't want to do anything to draw unnecessary attention away from the game itself. I feel it's an honor and a privilege to sit in Chick Hearn's chair. I stand in attention for the anthem. So does Michael. But if other people wanted to protest, if the players are taking a knee or if somebody else is doing something because they feel strongly about it, that's their right, too.
Boy, yeah, I wonder if that's now something that we're going to see at NBA games come the end of July.
Well, NBA players are the most progressive, outspoken players in the world. You saw that with the way LeBron responded today. So we'll see where it goes. But Adam Silver encourages NBA players to speak out on social justice. He encourages them to participate in these discussions. So the reaction you saw out of LeBron today is going to be not only accepted in the NBA, but encouraged. They want their players to weigh in on that stuff. And so we're having a different discussion. And I like Drew Brees. I think Drew's a good guy. But I think that he misread the room here. Here's Matthew in Glendale on line one. Hey, Matthew, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys. Or
hey, Matthew.
Hey, how's it going? Another way to look at it is that it's a tell. And what I mean by that is I think there's a lot of people like Drew Brees. And I think by giving him the benefit of the doubt of calling him a good guy, which is totally fine, but that also gives him more room, and that's because he's a white male. So the systematic racism, if you will, shows up when we give much more wiggle room to white players in this area than we do others. And the reason we give them wiggle room is because they are white, ultimately. And Jacob,
Matthew, isn't it possible that the guys like Vic Fangio and Drew Brees believe what they're saying? In other words, they've been raised a certain way and in a certain environment, and maybe Vic Fangio actually believes there's no racism in the NFL.
Vic Fangio has apologized today. Vic Fangio says what he said was not right and actually dialed it back. It remains to be seen if Drew Brees is going to come out and apologize for what he said.
But, Matthew, you know what I'm saying, right? Isn't it possible that they believe it?
No, I do, and I think that's a great point. I think, though, and maybe this is what you were saying, how the conversation has changed, that doesn't matter so much. Basically, that is no longer, as Jenkins clapped back at him, acceptable. And to go at Drew Brees like that, and I have no reason to not like Drew Brees either, but I just think we need to be a tiny bit more like Jenkins than like maybe you are or even I would regularly be, which just means let's flip the default there and put it on when it's coming from white America. Let's put it on the white guy instead of everywhere else, and then prove beyond a reasonable doubt that that's not what's going on. And it might just be a shifting, like you said. Drew might really believe that. That's cool, okay. But then he needs to create some space for something else, just like both of you said, in my opinion. And obviously, Jenkins feels that, too. And I'll finish with this. Hail to LeBron James. It's one reason I consider him the GOAT. And I don't want to get into that, but if you take his on-the-floor game, his accomplishments, and then his voice and how he uses it at the level he's at, that's huge. And you know who's going to come right behind him? You guys are right. Steph Curry's going to do it, too. And we need to pile on, not pile on Drew Brees, pile on that type of thinking.
That attitude, yeah,
well, I
absolutely.
Think that, by the way, Matthew, thank you for the phone call. Mace, I think that's what's happening.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing all of a sudden comments that people would just let slip are now being attacked. In some cases, people are being fired over that type of acceptance, of accepting that that for some reason black people are less than in some way. I mean, if there's anything we're learning from this whole discussion, it's that's the type of thing that needs to be eradicated. And that's why I'm surprised Drew went where he went.
Right, and we're seeing it more and more. I mean, you look at the crowds. I mean, the crowds are increasingly, you know, there are white kids, and there are brown kids, and there are Asian kids, and a lot of it is kids. A lot of it is a younger demographic. I mean, there are people of all ages marching. But I'm telling you, wouldn't you say I would say fully three quarters of that crowd is under the age of 30.
Right. Well, Steve Kerr said it the other day. He tweeted it the other day that this generation of young people is more equipped, more intelligent, more active than any generation before them. And they know how to mobilize electronically. And they understand how media works. And I think you're seeing a convergence of all of that. Now, Mace, the one area where it needs to show up is that that age group, statistically, is the group that's most unlikely to vote.
Yep.
They turn up at the lowest percentage of numbers. So hopefully in the fall, when you're electing state, local, and federal officials, these guys will realize that that's part of all this, too.
Yep. All right. 877-710-ESPN. Coming up for you, by the way, at 4:30, Pedro Mora is going to join us from The Athletic. We'll get the latest on baseball negotiations and where the owners are in terms of their conversations with the players right now. Mason Ireland, 710-ESPN.
Let me talk about Power Pro Plumbing. They are open. No matter what's happening with the protests, no matter what's happening with COVID, Power Pro Plumbing, Heating, and Air are open and available to take care of all your plumbing and heating needs. I know these guys well. I know the owner. I know the operations guy. They care about the communities they serve, and they know that plumbing problems, heating and air problems don't go away no matter what's going on the outside. So they're open. They're at full capacity. They're following all CDC guidelines. I've had them to my house a couple of times during the pandemic to deal with problems. They fixed them. They get in and out. They treat your house like it's their house, and I can't recommend them strongly enough. Here's their number, 800-584-4116. That's 800-584-4116, or visit powerproplumbing.com.